For WCBU News in Peoria, I'm Kristen McHugh. Peoria Public Schools Superintendent Sharon DeMolin-Carrant is looking forward to moving past COVID-19 with a new strategic plan. In her State of the Schools address, Carrant says administrators and community stakeholders have been developing the plan since the fall of 2019.
The result is a vibrant document filled with actionable steps to move Peoria Public Schools fully into the 21st century, with an emphasis on reimagining education to best serve our students.
Carrant says the plan spells out a new mission, vision, and values for the district, with adaptability, equity, and innovation among the values. She says Peoria Public Schools thrived over the past year by being proactive in handling the pandemic. Peoria County is beginning conversations around constructing a new consolidated Health and Human Services campus on the site of the current health department. County Administrator Scott Sorrell says the county followed a similar process for the Peoria Riverfront Museum and Headington Oaks.
Several of our infrastructure and facilities related planning documents recommend the consolidation of space for the Regional Office of Education, and where possible, consolidating multiple county service providers and departments into single campuses where possible.
Among other changes, the county is eyeing consolidating the health department, coroner's office, and children's advocacy center into the same Sheridan Road location to both cut down on costs as well as alleviate the need for adding building improvements to the existing locations. Tri-County health officials report 220 new COVID-19 cases and 3 additional deaths linked to the virus today. The deaths include a man in his 60s and a woman in her 70s in Peoria County, and a Woodford County woman in her 80s. There are currently 167 patients hospitalized for COVID-19, including 46 in the ICU. 5% of the area's population is home isolating. Greater Peoria's unemployment rate was 6.9% last month. That's more than 2 points higher than in March of 2020. The statewide March jobless rate was 7.1%. Find more news now at WCBU.org. I'm Kristen McHugh.
When Distillery Labs opens next spring, it will become Peoria's hub on the Illinois Innovation Network.
You can live, work, and learn in a certain setting, but then connect and take advantage from the other parts of the network.
That's University of Illinois President Tim Killeen. I'm Daniel Musisi, and this is WCBU's On Deck.
Support for WCBU's On Deck comes from State Farm agent Aaron Kilgore. A Peoria native and active community member, Aaron can help customers with auto, home, and life insurance needs. Information at aaronismyagent.com.
Today is Friday, October 8th. And this is WCBU's On Deck from Peoria Public Radio. The Peoria Housing Authority has officially handed Taft Homes over to a Wisconsin-based developer. Taft's name has also changed to Providence Point. Hannah Alani reports.
A $43 million effort to redevelop Peoria's Taft Homes is finally underway. Yesterday, city leaders joined the Peoria Housing Authority and Bear Development in celebrating the groundbreaking of Providence Point. That's the new name for Taft Homes. Starting now, Bear will demolish and rebuild the housing complex in phases. Many tenants will continue to live on site. Adam Templer works for Bear Development. He told WCBU residents' voices will be heard over the next few years.
We have staff resources at Bear and the on-site staff with Evergreen and then PHA too to hopefully address questions. And as things come up, and they will come up, we'll work with each resident to make sure their concerns are addressed.
Though Taft's name is changing, PHA Board Chairman Carl Cannon, who grew up in Taft himself, says heroes of Taft Homes past will be honored during the redevelopment. For example, a neighborhood street will be renamed for Arthur May Perkins, a longtime Peoria Public Schools educator and a former PHA board member. Perkins says she's honored.
It'll feel wonderful, and I think it'll be extra fine to show my great-great-grandchildren. I do have some of those running around, and bring them down and show them. Looky there, there's the street.
I'm Hannah Alani.
Here's some more of what's on deck in the WCBU newsroom. Blood banks are seeing an unusually low supply for this time of year, particularly among the universal O positive and negative blood types. And political strategist and former Obama advisor David Axelrod says he thinks Governor J.B. Pritzker plans to tout his pandemic response as a strength during his reelection campaign. Find more on these stories and others at WCBU.org. Distillery Labs is slated to open in the former Thomas Building in downtown Peoria next spring. It's just one hub of the Illinois Innovation Network, organized under the University of Illinois umbrella. Tim Shelley speaks with U of I President Tim Killeen about IIN and how it will play in Peoria.
We have 15 hubs, we call them, in the Illinois Innovation Network, which, as you probably know, is now supported by the state appropriation to build out capital systems across the state. So there are 15 of those. 12 are in every public university has a specific hub. Here in Peoria, it's another hub, but it's not specifically located in one public university. It's really a community initiative led predominantly by OSF and the Distillery Labs and Bradley University and the partners that are here, Caterpillar and other players in this region. And they have a very dynamic, very active action agenda that is exciting to see and understand, and of course we want to support it any way we can. And all of these hubs will be intercommunicating with advanced cyber infrastructure so that you can live, work, and learn in a certain setting, but then connect and take advantage from the other parts of the network. But Peoria has almost an iconic hub here that we think is really in a leadership role in really cohering a large community of a very collaborative institutions and individuals that have come together. There's a sense of excitement at the meeting we were at earlier today and forward progress that's remarkable to see. And so we were all inspired.
Yeah, and obviously medical is very big here in Peoria with our two big hospitals, and a big part of that is UICOMP. I mean, teaching the next generation of the doctors who are going to work at these hospitals and also, you know, innovate new ways to treat people, keep people healthy. Tell me a little bit about how UICOMP fits in.
Exactly. Of course, we have a medical school here in Peoria that's been here for a long time and is thriving as well with expanded physical facilities. And we just came from there and had a meeting with the senior staff and the dean and so forth, and had a wonderful set of presentations about their strategic vision for the future. We saw pictures of the 65 young people, mostly young, coming in to be next generation doctors, and most of them, by far the majority of them, are from Illinois. So this is a real down payment on public health in this state and in this region that we're seeing actively. And then we had a visit with OSF and their exciting work in cancer and oncology treatments. All of this plays really well together. And our College of Medicine is in a growth mode and deeply interacting with the other medical elements here, and with a responsibility and a role in urban health, regional health, rural health writ large, and with a very strong research enterprise as well that touches on many of the aspects. I'm particularly excited by community health and understanding, you know, the issues of aging and population health issues. They're all very strong here, and it's in a wonderful collaborative setting as well in that medical district, as you know.
You know, Discovery Partners Institute and Illinois Innovation Network across the state. Where, let's just say 10 years in the future, where do you see this being 10 years in the future?
So you're asking me to dream a little bit, I think, 10 years. But yeah. I think you've got the East Coast and the West Coast that have created a lot of innovation, a lot of companies, a lot of wealth generation. The middle part of the country, the Midwest, which is led by a state called Illinois, can show the world how to do innovation that is about prosperity, about wealth generation, and social equity development, so that we open the doors wide.
That was University of Illinois President Tim Killeen speaking with Tim Shelley about innovation and Distillery Labs. And before we let you go, today is day 5 of WCBU's Fall Fund Drive. And On Deck is here for you each day because of financial support from Greater Peoria. Join the community that powers WCBU with a contribution during the fall fund drive. Donate at WCBU.org. And that's it for On Deck today. Thanks for being here. I'm Daniel Musisi. Support for WCBU's On Deck comes from State Farm Agent Aaron Kilgore. A Peoria native and active community member, Aaron can help customers with auto, home, and life insurance needs. Information at AaronIsMyAgent.com. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. Today, it's a special episode exploring the trauma felt by families and survivors of Peoria gun violence. Jashonda Dunnigan struggles with the loss of loved ones to gun violence every day. But she's not alone. She now attends counseling through the OSF Strive Trauma Recovery Program. Tim Shelley spoke with Dunnigan and her counselor, Samantha Schubach, about the role trauma plays in Peoria's cycle of violence and how opening up about those experiences can help in healing.
Well, it goes like this. 2013, my brother was murdered inside his home with a home invasion alongside with his girlfriend. They were both murdered inside the home with my two youngest niece and nephew, who actually had to hear their father and her take their last breath and also hear the gunshots. Up to speed, last year, I lost my son in 2020 of September as well to gun violence. He was murdered at a dice game that supposedly went wrong. That's my story. Over the years since, even in this past year, past 6 months, 4 months, I would say, I have lost a total of maybe four or five more family members to gun violence here in Peoria, Illinois. And my family does make up a big percentage of Peoria. Also, my husband's side, we're two big, large families. So just think about that. Yes, most of the city of Peoria is walking around. It's not only my family, your family, everybody's family is walking around with some PTSD. This has become so normalized, like it's something like we're to eat it every day. No, this should not be normalized. It's affecting people. It's affecting us as a human race. Somewhere there has to be a stop. Enough is enough.
So how do we even begin to address that? How do we begin to address the trauma in our community? I mean, I don't know if we know. Is it on a personal level? Is it on a community level? Does it have to be both?
Well, that's a conversation Shonda and I have actually been having a couple of times now, is that it's both. It's community, it's individual, it's multi-generational. So all of a sudden it becomes ingrained into our families and our family systems. And so when we think we get a hold on it, maybe on an individual level, we forget that it's being passed from parents to kids and aunts to nieces and nephews. And it just seems to become systemic in that sense that it hasn't gone away. And we may be able to work on it, like I said, back at the individual level and see like we're making progress. But then how Jashonda pointed out, we've been working with her since December of last year. And since then, she's had four to five more violent-related deaths in her family, and we only started the process with having, I say only, a few when you first started, and it just keeps growing. And so while we think we get a hold on one thing, it just seems to keep going. I think one of the things that we're trying to aim at now is normalizing mental health treatment. Mm-hmm. One of the discussions Jashonda and I have as well is that it's hard to get other family members into sessions, because a lot of people don't want to come in and think they're sharing their business or talking mm-hmm. about other things. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to convince people like this is a private, confidential setting that your information isn't going to be put out there for everybody to know. And that when you come in, we do work on things. It's not just for, I think some people think it's either like a gossip session or perhaps the biggest thing I hear, especially from the teenage population I work with, is it's snitching, mm-hmm. and it's not.
Is that the biggest concern you see people saying, I'm going to come here, I'm going to talk about this, and it's going to get out somehow?
I think it's a growing misconception. I think there's also concern within the community that we don't talk about mental health. Mental health isn't a thing. It's something you just shove down and deal with it mm-hmm. and ignore it and move on.
You get over it.
Yeah, we'll just get over it. Or it's just to be expected.
It's the fear factor. It's everything is a fear. You deal with the violence of the trauma, and then it's, I can't tell anyone what I'm feeling. It's all a fear factor. If I do tell someone, I'm afraid to go and lay down everything. It's like you become naked. I am able, when I'm with Sam, just to be naked. I can tell my truth. These are the feelings I'm having. These are the thoughts I'm having. How do I work through these thoughts? How do I work through these feelings? Because this is not easy. To have multiple family members murdered, not easy at all. And we're seeing in this society, just deal with it, live with it. No, you have to learn to live with it. It's a learning process. But each day you're doing your best just to get up out of bed and get dressed and enter back into this world.
What do you say to someone who's afraid to take that wall down for whatever reason, to let your guard down, so to speak, and really talk about what you're feeling?
First, I just say, it's okay. It's okay. Come down the stride. Talk about it. Get it off. It's okay. Your business does not go out. If you're a harm to someone or yourself, yes. That's when. But come and just tell your true emotions where you could just be naked and no one can judge you. Come on. Go. Because we all need it as a community.
That was Jashonda Dunnigan and Samantha Schubach speaking with Tim Shelley about trauma recovery. You can find more information about those services at wcbu.org. WCBU reporter Hannah Alani speaks with Derek Booth and Jahan Gordon Booth in just a moment on All Things Peoria. They speak about the death of their son and why it's difficult for communities impacted by gun violence to come forward. And in 6 minutes, you'll hear from Terry Burnside, the leader of the House of Hope, the violence reduction nonprofit in South Peoria. He shares his personal story of gun violence and his vision for Peoria's future. This is a special edition of All Things Peoria, focusing on Peoria gun violence. I'm Daniel Musisi. Derek Booth and Jahan Gordon Booth understand firsthand the collective burden of grief and trauma borne by so many in Peoria impacted by gun violence. They spoke with WCBU's Hannah Alani about what leaders could do in response.
Derek Booth leads the Wraparound Center, a South Peoria-based one-stop shop for social services. Jahan Gordon Booth is one of Peoria's state representatives. In 2014, the couple faced something no parent ever wants to experience. They lost their 22-year-old son, Derek Booth Jr., in a shooting.
There's always talk about people need to come forward. People need to step up and provide witness. What people often forget is that these very people who you're asking to be a witness, they have to continue to live in those communities with what support, with what protection, right? And so understanding that the protections and supports that, you know, that you oftentimes see in a movie where people get moved to Omaha and they get a new identity and they get a whole new life set up for them, well, that's not the reality.
The city's homicide rate has surpassed its 2019 record of 25 murders in 1 year. The majority of the victims are under the age of 30. Many are young Black men. Derek Booth's son was 22 when he was killed.
The victims and the perpetrators we're seeing are getting younger and younger, and so that's really a serious concern. How do we reach them at even younger ages before they go down this road of violence? And teaching them conflict resolution skills and how to dream about things bigger than the streets and what the streets have to offer. So those are some immediate concerns that as a community, as a school district, that are concerning because we're seeing more and more of these aggressive behaviors. We're seeing more and more of these offenders and these perpetrators being younger and younger.
When Jahan attended the trial for the man accused of killing her stepson, she noticed the witness list did not include Derek Jr.'s friends.
The folks that were willing to come forward and be witnesses in that case were all women. They all had children, in particular sons, and they all had been impacted by gun violence in their lives, every last one of them. And so when you think about the juxtaposition that many of these women were in, none of them being friends of DJ, right? They were all older, by 15, 16, 17 years. They were not in the same friend group, but they just had that common denominator of being mothers, having Black sons, and having experienced trauma and losing someone to gun violence.
Thanks to witnesses who came forward, Derek Booth Jr.'s killer was convicted and sentenced. Jahan says she knows this wasn't easy.
As a woman, single, head of household, who you are then asking to do something, one, they've never done before, two, something that the community that they live in is probably not going to uphold them as a hero for doing. That recognition and that understanding of who we're actually asking to do these things, I think is incredibly important for informing policy as it relates to how you support people who you are asking to do probably what is going to be the most scariest thing that they've ever done in their life.
Following the trial, Jahan successfully passed a state law in her stepson's honor. Nicknamed DJ's Bill, the law provides protection to key witnesses of violent crimes who may not have actually seen a crime take place. Previously, the state only provided protection to eyewitnesses of crimes. Jahan and Derek say city leaders should be more proactive in reaching out to the women in communities where homicide rates are rising. They applauded Peoria Police Chief Eric Echevarria for his recent idea to host a summit for women directly impacted by violence. As homicide rates rise, Derek says he hopes to see more events like this.
I think it's initiatives like that that we need to continue to pursue. Because it can't do any harm. I think it can only do good. And if you can just save one child implementing an initiative like that, it's worth it. We want to save them all. We have hope that we can save them all. But in those type of initiatives, if one mom had an impactful conversation with a child or son, a grandson, the workshop or summit is worth it. And I think it's just another creative way. Because you never know who's going to make a difference in communicating with someone. And a lot of time it could be the person, but other times it could be the timing. And no one wants to lose a child, especially to gun violence. And if we can do things or have communications and conversations to prevent that, we need to do all we can.
The Wraparound Center is a one-stop shop for families in need of healthcare, legal aid, counseling, educational services, and more. It's located inside Trewin Middle School. Derek welcomes all city residents, regardless of whether they have children enrolled in Peoria Public Schools. I'm Hannah Alani.
That was Derek Booth and Jahan Gordon Booth speaking with WCBU's Hannah Alani about gun violence in Peoria. For more information on the Wraparound Center, visit WCBU.org. This is a special edition of All Things Peoria, focusing on Peoria gun violence. I'm Daniel Musisi. Terry Burnside leads South Peoria nonprofit House of Hope. As Peoria's homicide rate climbs, Terry hopes to prevent future tragedies by mitigating interpersonal conflicts before a gun is put in someone's hand.
Gun violence in Peoria has had a tremendous impact on Terry Burnside's life.
On the 26th of this month, my brother was murdered 32 years ago, the gun violence. His son was shot maybe 11 years after he was. A guy robbed him, and today's day is still an unsolved case. He's an amputee, had to get his leg removed. My youngest son was offered a six-figure contract from the Canadian Football League before he got shot, 10 days before he got shot. So that kind of shattered his dreams, ruined everything for him. For a few months later, my daughter was shot, sitting in a car with her friend. They just had went grocery shopping on a rainy night. It was raining so bad when they pulled back up to their apartment complex. They sat in the car, tried to let the weather slow down, and it didn't slow down. Eventually, a guy walked up to the car, knocked on the window, and they recognized him and said, "Hey, how you doing?" My daughter was a passenger. Her friend was driving. My grandson was in the back seat, and the other young lady's son was in the back seat. So the guy said, "Okay, I'm good." So they walked away. He turned around, came back, and just shot in the car. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, so the driver took off into the middle of the intersection. When she did, they were T-boned. So my daughter got shot in the side, pierced her side from the accident, broke her neck and her pelvis. My grandson in the back seat broke his leg, and the other passenger, little kid, broke his leg.
Though violence has rocked Terry's life, he firmly believes retaliation is never the answer.
One of my hardest things I ever had to do was greet the guy who killed my brother after he was released from prison. 32 years ago, I gave my parents my word. I said, "Well, we can't change it. So we'll just move forward and just keep it moving. I'm still hurt as if it happened yesterday, but I want to do something different. Instead of just retaliating, be the bigger person. My mom, my parents always told me that. Someone do wrong, someone do you wrong. Be the bigger person. So I lived up to those words, those expectations. They were tough. So to be able to greet the guy after he got out of prison, man, I knew him. We all grew up together. We went to school together. We went to church together. And to see him, when he first saw me, he was like trembling. Like, oh, I just shook his hand, reached out, shook his hand, and I hugged him. We both just shed tears. I like told him, brother, brother, we can't change the past. All we can do is move forward. You get on with your life, we get on our lives. You know, we can't change it. So why me do something stupid, you do something stupid, another life lost, or someone's going back to jail, it's not worth all that. Let's grow up and be mature and get on with our lives. And that guy, he's probably been home probably 10, 12 years now himself. Yeah. And I see him in passing. Hey, how you doing? Keep it moving. Are we cool? We'll never be cool. Are we cordial? Of course. Hey, how you doing? Shake you, love it, and keep going.
Today, Terry is 56 years old and leads House of Hope, a South Peoria nonprofit focused on trauma-informed care and youth mentorship as violence reduction strategies. Terry's resume in Peoria is vast. He chaired Peoria's chapter of Communities Against Violence. He's led countless vigils and peace marches. This year, he received the Humanitarian Award from the NAACP. But he hasn't always been a community leader. As a teen, he dropped out of high school and sold drugs.
I've been there and done that. Got myself in trouble, went to jail, I've been in prison. A lot of people say, well, what made you get it together, Terry? You know, when I started having children, I knew that it was no longer about self as Terry. Taking chances, going to jail, doing things, doing stupid stuff. And I sold drugs, I did crazy things like that. But I knew, and I shared the same thing with my son, who's got a son. I said, one thing I learned when I was getting in trouble, man, when it came to my children, I knew that I couldn't raise you up from the other side of that fence. I got to be on this side out here with you. I got to instill morals and values in you.
After returning home from jail, Terry worked in the automotive and construction trades. He also watched the violence in South Peoria rise, especially among young people. In 2007, Terry led a group of fellow mechanics in creating a nonprofit for car enthusiasts. The aim was to use racetracks and car shows to deter youth in the neighborhood from gangs, drugs, and violence.
So the cars were our hook to allow us to get into the ears and minds of the young guys, to develop rapport with them, in turn develop relationships. So once we got in with the good with the youth, we went to the parents, introduced ourselves to the parents, got involved with the school work, became mentors.
Terry believes if shown another way, young people are capable of change.
While my son was in the hospital, we were able to locate his shooter, the guy who shot him. And he came in. We talked. We were adults about this. He's a young kid. And he was so sad. He said, man, I'm sorry. That wasn't meant for you. So I expressed to my son, this is the kind of attitude you need to take home, bro. I mean, you wasn't intended target. Thank God you're still here. And then I shared a story about my brother. Retaliation, it vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
This summer, Terry had the opportunity to purchase an old church building at the corner of Howitt and Shelley Streets. That's where he moved House of Hope.
I call it a diamond in the rough. It's a diamond because it's almost shiny. It's so much potential. When I say rough, I'm talking about the rough part of the neighborhood.
House of Hope is a safe place for Peoria Public School students to do virtual learning and pursue workforce training. Trained counselors oversee support groups. You can take cooking classes at House of Hope and shop a free food pantry. Using his relationships, Terry has been able to learn about interpersonal conflict among youth and de-escalate fights before things turn violent. But sadly, for Terry, nearly all the city's homicide statistics in Peoria have faces and names. He knew the family of 19-year-old Martez Robertson. Terry mentored 17-year-old Jerry Snipes Jr.
Relationships is the new currency. I knew everybody was anybody in the city. Even with PCAP, I've always followed up with the individuals. The chief saw me at Jerry Snipes' scene. Chief, how did you find out about it? Said, relationships. Well, your phone was going off. I said, my phone was going off. People calling me.
Within her first year as mayor, Dr. Rita Ali formed the Safety Network, a group of community leaders and stakeholders. Nicknamed SNET, the group meets weekly. Terry is a member. Terry says there are lots of people in Peoria working to reduce violence. He hopes these efforts can become more streamlined in the future.
The problem here in Peoria is not a whole lot of consistency, a lot of great groups, a lot of great organizations. We've got to break down the silos and join hands.
In an effort to increase community trust in the police, Police Chief Eric Echevarria held a summit last week for women impacted by gun violence. Terry had a similar idea years ago.
I like the chief's intuition. I like his drive. I like his ambition. I like his push. So I said, Chief, you're on to something there. I said, but great. But why reinvent the wheel? He said, what do you mean? I said, on January 28, 2019, I held a Stop the Violence Peace Rally in Martin Luther Jr. King Park. What I did, sir, I'm like you. Out here in the community, I know the pulse of the community, the pulse of the city. So I said, what can we do differently to tug at the heartstrings of the young man? I said, this is 2019. I said, mothers. What I did, I bought a mother of some victims whose son was killed. I brought other mothers on this side of the fence, mothers, children who did the shooting. There wasn't a dry eye in the park.
As Peoria leaders discuss the 2022 budget, Terry hopes to see increased funding for community-driven resources, such as House of Hope. At the end of the day, Terry hopes Peorians both within and outside the communities most impacted by gun violence put more faith in young people.
Even people in the community, we always talk about how bad these children are. I give them this example. It's different if I want to go to Boosie Bank, First Commercial, First National Bank, Commerce, any of those banks. How can I, possible for me to go down there and make a withdrawal? I don't have no account set up, but more importantly, make a withdrawal when I haven't made any deposits. So how can we expect anything out of these children if we haven't poured it to them? So is it possible to have any expectations when you haven't invested in them? I'm not talking about monetary, just invested in them.
I'm Hannah Alani.
For more information on House of Hope, visit WCBU.org. Thanks for choosing All Things Peoria on WCBU. I'm Daniel Musisi. We had story help today from Hannah Alani and Tim Shelley. You can find more on today's stories and our ongoing coverage on the Violence in Peoria page at WCBU.org. You'll see links to community resources focused on attacking the problem and an interactive map showing where recent homicides have occurred and who's been impacted. Find the link at WCBU.org. This is WCBU Peoria, 89.9 FM, and WCBU.org, a public service of Bradley University and Illinois State University. For many residents of Peoria's South Side, grocery shopping is extremely difficult. The 61605 zip code has been considered a food desert since 2018, but things are about to change. In interviews with WCBU reporters Hannah Alani and Joe Deacon, Southside residents and community leaders celebrated the news of a new grocery store in the works.
Every day on his walk home from Peoria Manual High School, Tremere Cornelius passes a vacant building at the intersection of Western Avenue and Martin Street. Tall strands of grass grow out of cracks in the parking lot. The fading marks of an old Save-A-Lot sign grace the walls of the beige-colored building. The building's been vacant for years, but that's about to change. Harvest Supermarket, a full-service grocery store, could open as soon as 2022. Cornelius was excited when I told him the news.
Yeah, it's going to be refreshing, exciting, and convenient. That's what we need around here.
The 17-year-old says his family typically drives 15 to 20 minutes to the nearest Kroger in East Peoria to grocery shop. The person behind Harvest Supermarket is Pastor Chuck Brown, who signed a 3-year lease at 210 Southwestern Avenue. Brown is currently targeting an opening date sometime in February 2022 and looks to hire 20 employees. Peoria's South Side became a food desert when Kroger closed its store in Madison Park Shopping Center in 2018. Aldi first opened a store at 210 Southwestern in 1989 and closed in 2014. Save-A-Lot opened in 2017, but closed up shop after less than a year in business. Brown says he hopes Harvest Supermarket leads to other new businesses.
I really hope that this can begin a very positive trend of business growth and development, you know, in our South community. You know, we've had some of the greatest people on the planet come from South Peoria, and we would certainly like to be a part of revitalizing that community. And
neighbor Tomas Jimenez usually buys his food at Western Market in DeKalb, a convenience store at the corner of Howitt and Western. The 17-year-old works in an auto shop a few blocks from Harvest Supermarket. He's excited about having a real grocery store nearby.
I think it's pretty great, honestly, especially down here in the South End. It's always been kind of dead around here. And honestly, I think more new business in the area would be good for the economy around here, helping people get out more, going out shopping and stuff like that.
Last month, Southside native Willie Simmons opened apparel store TNT Outlet on Jefferson Street. Next month, he plans to open In-N-Out Market, a convenience store and fried fish restaurant one block south of the planned Harvest Supermarket. In addition to selling hot meals and basic grocery items, Simmons will have a microwave, stove, and coffee Keurig for community use. Simmons says having Harvest Supermarket nearby will boost his business and vice versa.
While I'm doing the things that I'm doing for the community, I think we could piggyback off of each other some of the things that he's doing and some of the things that I'll be doing.
Peoria's South Side is considered to be one of the poorest zip codes in the United States. About two-thirds of the neighborhood's population is Black. Marvin Hightower is the president of the Peoria chapter of the NAACP. He says this kind of economic development is exactly what he hopes to see in South End moving forward.
It's been 35 years, as we all know, of disinvestment down there. And so it will be an economic driver and a boost to our economy here in Peoria. And it'll affect all of the districts, not just 61605, if this one district is lifted up.
In addition to the supermarket, Brown plans to run two other businesses out of the facility. Dinner at Your Door features a food court and a delivery service. Brown Coffee and Cream will offer up breakfast pastries, as well as items like sweet potato pie and peach cobbler. Tremere Cornelius, the Manuel Senior, says he's really happy that the store will be locally owned. He believes that kind of representation in local business ownership will boost the reputation of the community.
It shows that it's opportunities around here that we can do something nice. You know, we got a bad perception. I don't know why, but, you know, it's a nice community, nice people. You know, they get along well.
I'm Hannah Alani.
Pastor Brown hopes to open Harvest Supermarket by next February. Professional baseball is back in Peoria after the COVID-19 pandemic canceled last season. Joe Deacon has more.
More than a year and a half seems like a long time. Calling it 20 months makes it seem even longer, or 620 days longer still. However it's phrased, that was the length of the Peoria Chiefs' separation from their hometown fans, an absence that ended with the home opener at Dozer Park earlier this week. Jessica Wolf and her 12-year-old son Ethan had seats a few rows behind home plate. She says the team's return made her a bit emotional.
I was just thinking I might cry. I'm so excited to be here, root on the Chiefs, and just be a part of a Peoria community again. It feels so good.
Chiefs general manager Jason Mott says the team took several pandemic-related precautions. Seating was capped at 20% capacity with alternating rows roped off, and everyone was required to wear masks.
I think people are used to it. You know, I think obviously people are getting tired of the mask, and we understand that. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's what we have to do to have baseball. And if I've got to wear a mask to have people in the stands, then, you know, so be it.
The crowd of 950 included John Sipp of Peoria, who came to the game with his wife Rebecca, 8-year-old daughter Maggie, and 6-year-old son Eli. Sipp admits being excited, but also a little apprehensive.
It is wonderful and amazing and still slightly anxiety-provoking. Crowds still make me a little nervous.
But you decided to come anyway?
Yeah, it's worth it.
Sip says having fans back at Dozer Park is about community, pride, and enjoyment, and serves as a bit of optimism that the worst of COVID-19 is over and people can start coming together again.
Things that are starting to get back to normal, and life is starting to get back. Hopefully we can continue taking care of one another, masking up and getting our vaccines, and things can get back to normal even quicker.
Friends Ashley Johnson of Washington and Stephanie Leverton of East Peoria sat a few rows behind the Chiefs' dugout along the first base line. Johnson says they go to every game every year, and they're glad the wait is finally over.
We're just so relieved to be back here watching the boys play and getting back into baseball, enjoying the summer, the start of the summer.
Leverton says being able to witness a game in person instead of watching on a TV screen is an awesome feeling.
I think it's great, especially like the community of Peoria just coming together to cheer on a local team. And I know the boys appreciate it, and it's awesome to be back. I have chills.
Peoria is an affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals, and this year's roster includes a handful of players who were with the team in 2019. Former Chiefs manager Chris Swagger is back following a two-season hiatus after leading the team to back-to-back playoff appearances.
We've all been missing this. I think everybody's happy that baseball's back, especially in Peoria. We've got a great fan base and a lot of support here. You know, everybody does a good job. It makes us feel welcome, and definitely felt that tonight.
Mott jokingly says getting ready for opening day after the long layoff was similar to a wedding. A lot of planning, and then it's over before you know it. He says the absence definitely made for a long 20 months.
Going through not getting, you know, having a season last year, just looking out every day, seeing an unused ballpark, that was pretty tough. So to see fans here, you know, seeing the season ticket holders, people coming up to me. I haven't seen all these people in a long time, so it's good to reconnect with them for sure.
Not everything went as the Chiefs hoped, however. Peoria suffered a 3-2 loss to the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, but the bright side was all about having the team and fans back, according to usher Jeff Walker.
It's definitely a bright spot. There's nothing like Peoria Chiefs baseball.
The series with Wisconsin continues through Sunday, and Quad Cities comes to Peoria next week for a 6-game series starting Tuesday.
That's reporter Joe Deacon talking with Peoria fans and personnel about the team's return to Dozer Park.